Express yourself. Welcome to Inside Manchester on FCUM Radio. This week we're doing a feature on zines. I'll be meeting with zine collectors, zine creators and zine fans. So stay tuned to hear everything you want to know about zines.
FCUM Radio, FC and Community United.
Welcome back to Inside Manchester and our special about zines. Over the next half hour, I'm going to take you on a wonderful journey through the world of zines, from fanzines to music zines to art zines. And to start us off on that journey is Natalie Rose Bradbury, also known as the Shrieking Violet, a zine maker extraordinaire.
I grew up surrounded by fanzines because, fanzines have a very long history. Probably most significantly during the punk era in the 1970s, and my dad was growing up in the 70s and 80s, and he had a lot of zines that he brought kind of in the late 70s, early 80s, so I always knew of them from having them in our attic and kind of going through them as a child, so I'd always had an ambition to make a zine one day. My first fanzine was called The Shrieking Violet, the same as all my other fanzines, but it was just called Issue 1. I was playing in a band called The Shrieking Violets, and then I liked the name, so thought I may as well stick with it, and set up my blog, which was called The Shrieking Violet. And the fanzine grew out of the blog, because I thought the blog was quite a limited format. For one thing, each one comes as a kind of finished product, a kind of a self-contained thing that stands alone in its own right. Whereas with a blog, what frustrates me is that it kind of flattens everything down, and as you add more content, it pushes the old content down, so whatever's the most recent article you've written, it's at the top. But it's not necessarily the most interesting one at the top, if you know what I mean. I think the beauty of the fanzine format is how easy it is, how accessible to make a fanzine, and how easy it is to reproduce and distribute. One of the reasons I started making my fanzine was because I trained as a local newspaper journalist and I couldn't find a job, so I decided to apply some of the skills that I'd learned on my journalism training to making a fanzine, for example, page layout and that kind of thing.
So for those that don't know so much or are thinking about making their own fanzine but are not really sure what it may entail, can you kind of give a description of, you know, how you'd go about making your own fanzine and the things that could or wouldn't go in a fanzine?
I wouldn't say that there's anything that couldn't go in a fanzine, because really, honestly, anything and everything does go in fanzines. I think there's a clue in the name fanzine, i.e. think about what you're passionate about, maybe what you're a fan of, in inverted commas, and then write something based around that, or draw something based around that.
And of the fanzines that you've seen in your time collecting and making, which in particular stand out to you?
It's not really a fanzine as such, but it started as a fanzine. Well, I should probably go back a step and say that there's quite a fine line between magazines and fanzines and different types of kind of published magazines and actually, my favourite's called Article Magazine, and it's from Sheffield, and basically, Article Magazine is everything the Shrieking Violet would love to be. But it started as a fanzine by two guys in Sheffield who kind of wrote about Sheffield's art and culture scene, and now they've kind of expanded outwards, and they focus on different themes and different issues, and they have writers writing on different cities and places and subjects. Each and every fanzine is so different. So there's some which are really, really personal, and are quite like a diary, and they're written by just one person. And there's some which are on a single topic, which can be kind of a very narrow or specific topic. For example, I think there's one fanzine all about menstruation, and that's what each issue is about. But my fanzine's more of a collaborative fanzine where the content isn't just written by me, it's written by different people who each have their own particular interest or expertise or passion. The best way to get involved in the Shriek Violet is to email me at natalie.rose.bradbury@googlemail.com saying a bit about yourself and what you're interested in and what you do, and maybe a link to your work or your blog or website if you have one. The Victoria Vast Fanzine Convention is a one-day event which celebrates all things kind of fanzine and self-publishing related at Victoria Baths, which is a very beautiful complex of swimming pools and Turkish baths in South Manchester. And the first one happened last year, and we had fanzine makers from all over the country who came and had stalls. So they came and sold their work and kind of talked to people, and you could go along and browse their work and buy it, or some of it was free as well. And then this year's event, there's also going to be a film screening and an exhibition of some posters from a fanzine and some workshops to make your own Victoria Bass fanzine. And there's going to be some speakers and a vintage caravan parked outside which sells zines as well.
I'm here with Craig Barr of Salford Zine Library, one of the foremost collectors of zines in Manchester, to ask for his views of zine and zine culture. So Craig, when was Salford Zine Library founded?
It was over 2 years ago now, in January, so it would be in January 2010. It's founded by me and my friend Matthew Walker-Dyne, who's since left Manchester and gone to Glasgow and set up actually a zine shop called Good Press, I think it is. And we basically donated to libraries in the past, and we thought there wasn't really a resource in Manchester that we knew of, and so we thought, well, we should set one up ourselves, really, rather than just donating zines to zine libraries in New York and Toronto and these far-flung places. We just thought, Manchester needed a zine library.
How long have you been collecting zines for?
Me personally, I started buying zines. The first zines I ever bought would have been football fanzines. I used to buy Those Were the Days, which is an Ipswich Town fanzine. That was my first interaction, and I would have bought that when I was about a teenager. So, but yeah, like 15 years ago or something ridiculous. Yeah.
How many zines have you got in your collection at present?
It's not my personal collection. I think I have to establish that, really. I look after the collection. I'm just the trustee of it. Yeah, people donate and they come from all around the world. It's about 1,400.
And which countries, what's the range of countries you've got zines from?
It's a lot. Like, just in the last week, I've had Taiwan, Japan, this guy from South America, from Brazil sends a lot. I get stuff from Chile, lots from South America, actually. North America, loads, really. It's probably most of the zines probably come from North America or the UK. And then across Europe, Australia. I actually made a film about the library and the contributions we get and the people who actually donate zines, and I interviewed people around Manchester, but I also decided to email people and ask them to respond with a talking head video to the questions I emailed them, and those videos came in from all around the world. We're talking South America, Japan, India, just across. Some of the videos I couldn't use in the film because I've yet to get translated because they're in various languages, and it's just finding a friend who can speak that language. And
what's the name of the film?
It's called Self-Publisher of the World Take Over. The film is going to be shown at the Victoria Bass Fanzine Convention on the 19th of May, which is free to visit, and if you're into zines, you should definitely go because there's lots of zine vendors there, people selling zines. I'll be there with part of the library, and I will be doing a bit of a talk. Anything you could write about anything you could illustrate, or any you know, any kind of art, or anything you can print, you can imagine, it can be put into a zine, and it's so vast. We get lots of stuff that is heavily design based, because I guess a lot of stuff that was print based, like text heavy, now just uses the internet, uses blogs. It doesn't need to be printed. But we've got zines that go back to the 60s that were science fiction zines. We've got lots of football fan zines. We've got zines about all kinds of political ideas and ideologies. We've got zines that are essentially artist books. They're made to a quite high standard. Lots of photography zines. Photographers really have embraced Megan zines, because they've always self-published photographers, but I think they've embraced the lo-fi way of putting stuff out and cheaply, and as a way of sharing their work. But yeah, every political idea you can think of is I've seen covered in a zine. You can write about it. Yeah, poetry, literature. Some people self-publish novels. Short stories, you get short story zines. So, yeah, anything you could think of could be a zine, and I think there's not much I haven't seen. I just, anything will go into the archive. I never refuse anything, even if I found it awful or abhorrent, or I'm a complete, it's all about free speech, it's all about, anyone can express it in any way. I don't think anyone should ever be cut off. They should just be challenged. I don't think you should say, oh no, you can't say that, that's wrong. You should just say why it's wrong. I don't think you should ban anyone from saying anything. And that's basically what the library is about. It's about freedom of speech, it's about freedom of not having an art director telling you what you can and can't do, or an editor telling you what you can and can't do, or having your work censored in any kind of way. That's the whole point of it, really, isn't it? It's an alternative to the mainstream publishing. That's the difference.
So if someone wanted to add a zine to collection, how would they go about doing that?
They basically just send the zine. They post it to me. The address is on the blog. That's normally how they go about it. Or when the zine library does open up in its new home, they can donate it there, just leave it there. There'll be an inbox. Whenever we've had an exhibition or in our previous home, there's always been an inbox. You can just go there and leave zines. But yeah, that's the easiest way to do it.
And if somebody wanted to start their own collection of zines, where would be in Manchester a good starting place to go and find zines for their own collection?
There's actually a zine shop. I don't know if you know, called Good Grief. It's in the Northern Quarter of Manchester, in the Soup Kitchen. There's lots of places online where you can buy zines. My friend, like I said before, who set up the library, he's got good press in Glasgow. They sell design-led zines. If you see anything in our archive when you visit the library, you can normally find an email address attached to a zine or something, some way of contacting the actual maker of the zine, and then you can easily just email them and ask them if it's still available to buy.
So Salford Zine Library is due to find a new home, relocating. Where will you be?
It's going to be in the Nexus Art Cafe. They've kindly given me a whole room permanently, which is amazing. It's an amazing space, but it does need work. So at the moment I'm trying to raise funds using Sponsume, I think it's called, which I only recently became aware of, and somebody said, oh, you should use that. And I made a video just basically saying why we need the funds, what we're trying to do. But what we're really trying to do in the room is just smarten it up, put some furniture in there, and put some shelving in, and make it just a nice, safe, comfortable space that's clean, and the zines will be protected, and people will just sit there and read. And also, the great thing about this, it's a home where our previous homes haven't been that easy, that accessible. This you'd be able to visit it. It's open all the time, next to our cafe. It opens all night, and it's a nice venue, nice, comfortable venue. So. Apparently the first zine was, it depends what you classify as a zine, like, to be honest. A lot of people say it was a science fiction fandom, and it was a fanzine. I think it's called The Comet, and it was in the 30s or something ridiculous, and it's when science fiction fans were just looking at a way to share ideas and reviews, and a lot of the zines that we've got that come from the 70s that are science fiction, they tend to be like letter-based, and just people responding to letters that people had previously written, and it's just people arguing about science fiction. And then you got the counterculture in the 70s and in the 60s, and the underground comics you got in that era as well. But it depends what a zine is. I mean, because some zines now, they seem quite reminiscent of political pamphlets that would have been printed, we're talking hundreds of years ago, with working class movements. And I went to the museum, and it would have been the People's History, I think it would have been, and yeah, you can see stuff that's printed there and duplicated, and you think, well, that's almost like a zine. It's an idea, it's duplicated by the author and then put out, and it's DIY, isn't it, essentially? So it's what you classify as a zine, and a lot of people have a different idea. But
any listeners, how would they contribute to Salford Zine Library via Sponsor Me?
They just need to go online and at www.sponsoryoume.com/project/Salford-Zine-Library. It's a bit of a mouthful, that. I guess you could just Google it and it'll probably come up as well. That would be the easiest way to find it. And on there, you can basically you can sponsor the library, and depending on how much you sponsor, you get something in return. I think for £5, you get an invite to the launch night, £10, a DVD, plus the launch night, and £25, you get a guided tour through the library. And for £50, I'm actually giving away a piece of my artwork from my website, an original piece of artwork. So we're trying to reward people for giving them something back for what they're giving and putting into the library. But of course, also, they'll be getting a home for the library where they can visit and spend as much time as they like looking at the collection. So far, it's doing quite well, but I need to raise a lot more awareness and get people to get more traffic to the site.
Next, I met with Tasha Whittle and Lottie Smith, also known as Paper Moon Publishing, producers of one of the best zines around. I asked them, when did they first meet and when did they first start collaborating?
We met at uni. We did the same course in a while back,
yeah,
mid-2000s, maybe. we did both studied illustration and animation at MMU.
It's Manchester Art School now.
Oh, it is, Manchester Art School.
We went to an art school, and we started collaborating kind of about 2 years ago. We've always just been like massive fans of each other's work, and we both know each other well enough to be able to work with each other, which I think is important.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like a natural thing to do. I had a photocopier at my house at the time, so it was like, well, I've got a photocopier, why the hell not? And it's the whole kind of self-publishing thing. It's like you can publish stuff at something and it's acceptable, and you don't need to go past, you don't have to tick boxes, just kind of like to do something, really, more than anything else. I've always enjoyed zines and sort of DIY, sort of doing it yourself. That's always been quite a big inspiration for me, but it was never like, let's make a zine.
It was a combination of a photocopier.
Yeah.
Probably a drink. And me deciding that a rainbow, just doing seven of them would be a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. In a rainbow colour as well, which still is a really good idea. Well, all of the zines are, it's under Paper Moon Publishing, and they're all kind of different within sort of colour, but then also we've had titles.
Yeah, we kind of set loose themes because obviously we were asking people to send stuff in order to give them a little bit of a lot of times if you say to someone anything, they kind of go, what? If you make them work to something, and I mean, to be honest, if it was completely irrelevant to the theme, it was still okay.
but it was
just kind of an excuse to get people started on an idea, but it could be as obscure as you want, really.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't the important thing, I think. A load of different work was the important thing. And we ended up getting something from that guy in Brazil.
Yeah.
He found us on the internet.
He found us and he just kept submitting to everything that we did, which is amazing.
Nice as well.
Yeah, like, really beautiful. Like really strong illustration, different
languages. Pen and ink, it reminded me of Ronald Scarfe stuff.
Yeah, really abstract.
Really amazing stuff.
Yeah. Nice. But within all of the zines, there was obviously illustration, there was a recipe, there was an erotic novel. There's poetry as well. What else? There was some other thing. There was a guy, he's called Geordie Bryan, and he's got this really interesting history, especially through the punk movement, and he was there all the time, around the time. So whenever we had like a title, his story would be based on our quite loose title. So one of them was like 1, 2, 3, go. And so he wrote a story about his first ever, like, right, I'm going on tour. And he went on tour with Sweezy and the Banshees. And it was that thing. It's that kind of instant reaction that what we got from people was nice. I actually also included with those was a Q&A with an artist as well. So we had Ghost Patrol in Australia.
David Shrigley.
David. No, it wasn't David Shrigley. It was the other one. Oh, fuck, Tom Gold. Oh, yes. It's like question time. Tom Gold.
He has spots in The Guardian. And, I mean, we sent them the Q&A on and off chance. And, I mean, one of the things with the Q&A was we asked them to print it off and actually handwrite it. Because, you know, there's something that little bit personal about seeing someone's handwriting or doodles. And we didn't. It was kind of like a shot in the dark. Well, you know, Tom Gold, big illustrator, we'll send it to him anyway. And he even printed it off. I mean, we said in the email, I think, that if you don't have the time to actually print it, handwrite it, scan it, send it back, you could just type the answers. But we got a really nice one back with he'd handwritten all of his answers and he'd done little doodles around all the gaps on the page and stuff. It was amazing. Like,
dead nice that I get such a positive response from somebody that's quite
busy, commercially,
and big as well, so that was nice.
I think a lot of what, especially when we started off, it was just friends and people we know who do different types of work, and you know.
How did you get out there? How did you get promoted? How did you get people to see it?
We had a little. What did we do? We just
email people. We just told a lot of people. Basically, bugged a lot of people until they gave us work.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yes, yeah. Draw something.
Yeah, can you draw something, please? Can we have something constant?
Yes.
It was quite, but then when you get it through, it's like, yes, it's all worth it. Kind of makes it worth it. Yeah.
And people want to do these things. I can be the same if someone asks me to do something. Kind of, I'll do it in a couple of days. And I think when you're put yourself on the other end, when you're the instigator of asking for stuff, you realise you should probably just do it. Yeah. I think that's the thing with design, you just got to do it. It doesn't matter if it's your choice what you put in there. So if you don't, it doesn't have to be scrubbed up, it doesn't have to be polished, you don't have to remove all the marks on the paper or clean it up if you don't want to, because it's up to you what you print. So
yeah,
it's refreshing change from people telling you clean this or do that, yeah, or I want it to be this shade of red. Like, just do whatever you like. I don't think there was anything we didn't include.
Yeah,
because everyone's made that effort, and I mean, who are we to turn around and say don't like that? I mean, everyone has their tastes, so it's not really a matter of importance that you personally love every single thing in it. Not saying that we disliked any of it, but I'm saying that it doesn't have to be your favourite. Every page doesn't have to be your favourite, because it could be someone else's. Paper Moon actually comes from something that me and another one of my one of the girls I worked with a lot at uni, called Charlotte as well. The two Charlottes. We came up with Paper Moon Publishing and it was kind of this idea that it could be used if you made designs, if you made magazines, if you made cards, we really liked the idea of it as a magazine title, but it was one of those things where literally it was just hanging around as just this name that we really liked. I mean, she lives in London, but she has stuff in design as well. So it was just a matter of it's a nice random name. Keeping it as being publishing, it means that you can kind of put it on other things that you do as well, as a collective, kind of bringing other people into it, so you know, just leaves it a bit more open.
Yeah.
And also that way the zine didn't have a specific title, which I think was important to us, because it wasn't
or a particular sort of name.
It wasn't,
you know, if you give a name to something, you're kind of shortening not like what you can have in it, like bracketing, closing yourself to, like, this is maybe what it might just be, but it's not like that at all. It's completely different,
because you could do a whole nother. I mean, the initial idea was the fact that the first zine was red and then there'd be orange, and that was going to be a set, so obviously after that set it would then go on to a different zine. So it wouldn't be, so that we decided we wanted to do 7, so there was one for basically it would look nice on your shelf.
Yeah.
If you had a rainbow, obviously you see every spine, The concept was literally like it would look nice
on your shelf, in a brown box. And
also, you just don't see zines printed on coloured paper. So we thought, why not? If you get everyone to keep mostly to a black and white or tonal kind of images, then they'd work on any colour, and they tend to all be black and white with maybe a colour cover.
So just wanted to make it a bit different, and it does look different. You get a kind of a different feel from having those different colours as a background.
So were there any...
Largely, like, within how I work normally, I'm quite, like, a perfectionist. Hmm. And I'm quite, like, ridiculous when it comes to detail. And I think, for me, what I liked about doing the zine was that it kind of made me not be like that. Because it was... We had a photocopier. I couldn't go, oh, it's not... You know, the tones aren't quite right on it. Because a photocopier's a photocopier. They're never right.
Mm.
So you've just got to... That's just how it is. So it kind of took that element of... I think, like, one of the things that I always get told is to leave something alone. Like, I'll spend too much time at the end of something kind of deciding whether it's right. Whereas with the zine project we did... It was like, you photocopy it, bam, you need it out. You know, you just kind of, you do it, and you don't necessarily have to be particular about whether something's, you know, 5 millimetres from the edge of the paper. It's not, that's not what's important about it. It's about getting a lot of people's work out into the hands of people who want to have a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, for me, a zine's almost like a thing in passing. I don't think I could ever have, like, a huge collection of them, even though I have loads of books. It's not that I wouldn't keep them, the ones I've got, I wouldn't keep, but... I almost think there's something to be passed around.
Mm-hmm.
In my eyes, there's something which... Because they're normally quite small. Can have them for a week or so, take them in. If there's something you particularly like, there's normally some kind of reference to more of their work, which, to be honest, will probably be of a better quality, because most designs are photocopied.
Yeah.
So it can lead you in the direction of someone's really nice work, and then kind of see it as an item to be passed on.
Mm.
It's like a tiny little... kind of reference book to new ideas that you can just give to someone else. And because it's not worth a lot of money, people don't have a problem with, if you paid £1 for it or a couple of quid for it, people don't really have a problem with passing it on. I think it's quite nice to find something like that.
See, I keep all of mine.
Yeah, you see,
I have my shelf on the side. I used to go to sort of DIY hardcore shows, and they used to have records and then zine boxes, so you used to pick all it up. So for me, it's like instant inspiration, like you were saying before. But I think with some zines, some of them that I've got, they're like beautiful diaries. People really pour themselves into it, and it's quite interesting just to have... It's quite fascinating for me anyway, to have that real personal point of view. Like, you picked up someone's diary, but they've published it, and it's just, it's out there. I quite like that.
It's a good excuse to, like, meet up without you just going to the pub or, you know... It's like you're doing something at the same time. But, I mean, you could do it in the pub.
So yeah, totally. Why not? Yeah, exactly. We could totally do it in the pub.
You know what I mean? You can do it over dinner and a glass of wine and do the photocopying or lay out all the work that you've had submitted and, you know, decide which pages you want it on.
Mm.
It's kind of quite a sociable... excuse to be sociable while actually creating something. So,
It's more relaxed, isn't it? Less... We've got to do it like this, kind of thing. So
it's like doing the work that you love, but without the pressure.
Without anyone else's guidelines, basically. It's just up to you. And you don't have to be like... And because you're not doing it in order to promote yourself, you're not even looking at it thinking, how does this, you know, represent me? Mm-hmm. How are, you know, future clients going to look at it? Because that's not what you're doing it for. You're kind of just doing it for you.
Mm.
We really are. I think that's what... That's how I see zines. It's something that's done for you. And it's nice to put it out there to see what, like... Because there are people who appreciate it, but... Like, they do tend to be quite personal.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, like, you can... They're really individual. And I think that's why they're individual, because no one's answering to anyone while they're making them. They're just answering to themselves.
Exactly.
And, I mean, you do get some which are pushed a little bit more towards magazines in the sense that they're very thought out. But that's not kind of what we were going for. It was just we know a lot of people who have a lot of nice work,
We just wanted to put
an excuse for people to look at it. And it wasn't, it's not like a self thing really, it's just a, at the time obviously we were on a uni course, our uni course was really quite close, there wasn't very many of us at all. I think 28 of us, and we all really got on. So obviously when we all went our separate ways, like everyone kind of stayed in touch. So it's a good excuse to get everyone on the email from around the place and kind of get back in touch with them.
So I think this work with any idea, it's like if you believe that it's really good, if it makes you laugh, then do it.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time laughing more than anything else, I think.
Yeah, there's no rules to it. Just fold a piece of paper in two and unfold it, photocopy it, done.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all there is to it.